Hey guys, welcome to a very special off-the-cuff episode. This is not your regularly scheduled program. And if you listen to all of my shows, this is going to be the same show across the board. So, Listen, Bitch podcast, Faith, Fire, God, and Country are the same episode today. Don't feel like if you listen to one, you need to still catch the other because I literally am just cross-posting this episode. Tomorrow, my son walks into something that most people in the world will never understand. Tomorrow is actually called Pickup Day. If you don't know what that means yet, what's awesome is by the end of this episode, you're going to know because we're going to kind of go through. I'm going to just kind of go through everything that's going to happen and just all of that. So today is the last day of receiving, and tomorrow the drill instructors come. In case you're new here, I've told you guys how my son was planning to go to the Marines. This has been his lifelong dream, right? All of you guys have heard me talk about the fact that he, there was at one point we didn't think this was going to work out, and it was like the most devastating time. And then we also had this cool thing where he got his ship date, which was September, and that was my Mother's Day gift. He was like, "Mom, how about one more summer?" And I'm like, "Yes, okay, absolutely yes." He'd quit his job so that he could spend time with myself and his little sisters, hanging out before he ultimately leaves. And so he's been home, not working, just really hanging out with them. And the plan was September. So I guess I'll go back because I just want to talk about the God moments really that I experienced in this journey and kind of everything. I'm going to take you guys through everything for the last few days. I think it's really great for me emotionally. I can process this. And I also like, what if I can help another Marine mom out there who has no idea? Maybe her son's waiting, or maybe she's gone through it and just didn't have the words for it. So this is what happened. A couple months ago, I declared that July 12th was going to be a family day. And we do have them like every other Sunday, but getting all six of my kids together, because I've got two girls that have moved out, they have their own lives, one of them is getting her master's and has a really great boyfriend. The other is engaged and she's a teacher. And I mean, they have their own lives. They're doing their thing. So yeah, schedules get a little messy. I have a 16-year-old who is very outgoing and he's the social butterfly and he has, a job and really hard to get them together. I made this day very mandatory. We've all known about it for about 6 weeks. Big plans, like this is it. And the day before, my son who is going into the Marines, we kind of got in an argument about it because he's like, "Well, I made other plans, I forgot." And I'm like, "No, sir. Like, this is mandatory. You're coming. I planned this a long time ago. I'm demanding. Like, you have to go. This is, I'm pulling a mom card. You have to go." And so he's like, "Okay, yeah." So he cancels his plans. And I told him Sunday morning, I'm like, "Baby, I'll call it right now. This is one of two mandatory family days that I'm gonna put on you before you ship out. So today, and then we'll have a going away party for you when you ship out in September so that all of your siblings, can say goodbye and we can have one last little hurrah together because I think that's important." And he was like, "All right, two mandatory family days. That's fine." Okay. So here's the thing, Sunday comes around and three of my kids are at work and they're going to meet us at 4 o'clock. We're supposed to be at my father-in-law's at 3 o'clock. I'm getting stuff ready. My husband loads his truck. He takes the little girl. So it's just my son and I here. And his phone rings and he answers it. And he's looking at me and he's shaking his head, "Yeah." And I'm like, "What the heck?" And he hangs up the phone and he's like, "Mom, if I want to be in infantry, I have to leave Tuesday." And I was like, "What?" And so I immediately lose it. I cry. I can't talk. I say, "Just give me a minute." And I breathe and I drink some water and I compose myself. And then I'm like, "What's going on?" And he makes a couple phone calls to his recruiter, to Boss Man. And Come to find out, his September ship date was for comms, and that's not what he wanted. His dream for the Marines is infantry, and it just so happens they had something open up today, and they let him know this is your last chance to get in on infantry. And I saw the fear. Probably an 18-year-old isn't going to admit it, but I saw that, and he's like, "Mom, what should I do?" And I'm like, "Baby, you've wanted this your whole life. Like, you've been dreaming about this. This is it for you. Infantry here. This is your chance. You have to take it." And he started to say, like, he wants to work on his runtime, and I'm like, "That's all an excuse, and it's just you holding on here to think you have to get better." Because he already passed all the testing, he already passed all the training. Like, he's ready, right? Like, we know he's ready, ready. And so I said, "You just got to pull the trigger." That's the news I got right before we drove to family day. So I go ahead and text everyone and let them know it's going to be a going away party. So that's it. We have a going away party for him at 7 o'clock that night. He made the official acceptance call, which is where he says, "Yes, I take the assignment." And then the very next morning, we're told he had to come sign at the recruiter office. And so we spend the day, we eat around that call at 7 o'clock. I feel him withdraw. And I just kind of want to talk to you guys a little bit because this is Marine Mom Diary, okay? I want to talk about who he was even before this, because Malachi is this kid that he was like my most loving, affectionate kid. Like, absolutely. The look at me kid, like, he did all these silly dances and always play, like, just playful, super light, loving kid. I'm telling you, the most affectionate baby I've ever had. And he continued that. I mean, he kissed me on the forehead every single night, well, until he was 18. Just all of these things. He was so loving the past couple months, you guys. And I don't know if everyone's going to experience this. I have talked to another mom, two moms actually, that felt the same way. It's like he pulled away. He pulled away from me the past couple of months. And that's been hard because, like, in my heart, I'm thinking we have to continue to grow closer and be stronger and all these things. I don't know how I'm going to handle this. You're pulling away. Like, it's almost like, he's kind of rude. And there was even a night where my husband was like, "Dude, you don't get to be rude." And I'm like, "I understand he's not being rude. I think on some level, psychologically, he's like, he's internalizing what's happening, and he's protecting himself, right?" And so I do some research. I start reading books about, what happens, because he's my oldest son. He's my first boy. I've never had an 18-year-old son, let alone an 18-year-old son going into the Marines. I don't know what they do. I don't know what they think. I don't know how their brains work, right? Biologically, we're very different. Our brains are different. Our thought process is different. And so I'm like, man, maybe he's just going to be like so cold and distant that it will make it easy when he leaves for both of us, because I'll be so annoyed with, like, just he's being a jerk, right? That's almost what it felt like to me. And so I'm feeling that feeling. I'm just even just driving to family day and kind of seeing him, like, he pulled away that night. He let me hug him all day. Like, I hugged him and I would just cry little tears, just crying randomly, periodically, of just like, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy," because he's still just a baby, right? But then there was also that feeling of like, he's pulled away from me and I feel like I've lost him and now I'm really losing him. And it was a really, really weird, it's a weird emotion to carry, to be honest. And so that night, we had a slumber party, his two little sisters. Okay, that's his life right there. I mean, he spent like all day, every day with those girls this whole time. That's who he's been with. And he's been so good to them. I mean, he carries them to bed and reads them bedtime stories and plays with them and also annoys them and pisses them off and fights with them and like all the things you would expect. But he's just been very hands-on with them and they're his whole world. And so we had one last slumber party with him. We, all crawled into bed and played Mario Kart and watched TV until like 3 in the morning. And he has to get up Monday morning. So we stay up all night, basically. And then he has to be at the recruiter's office at 9:30 in the morning. And he's like, "Mom, I'm gonna go say goodbye to one of my friends." He scheduled a morning breakfast date. So I'm up, I make sure he's up. I couldn't sleep, y'all. Of course, obviously, Sunday night there was no sleeping. And so yeah, I wake up with him and he hugs me by and he holds me pretty tight, and I felt his little body quake a little bit, and I cried, but I knew I was going to see him at the recruiter's office in a couple hours, you know, so I'm like, let him, don't freak out on him right now, okay? You have time to say goodbye. So I gave him that space there. He goes and he you know, meets with his friend and stuff, and I meet him at the recruiter office at it, whatever, 10 in the morning is when we were there. So we go in there, and I pretty much cried, like from the time he left that morning to go with his friend until I had to leave. It was just like trying to let it out so I could be strong and show him I'm gonna be okay. You know, obviously, you don't want your son to think you're emotionally incapable of surviving this. We've all joked about it, always joked about, like, you know, this is probably going to kill me. Your sisters went to college. I barely survived that. It was traumatizing for me. But I got to call them. I got to see them. I could drive to them and talk to them whenever I wanted. This was going to be a very different experience. We get to the office, and his recruiter is so great, like, talks us through everything. He just had a baby, so we got to talk about his baby and you know, just a lot of things, and I felt really comfortable, and I felt like this is good, these guys are good. And it God moments, okay? God moments. Number one, family day that I said was mandatory. We all got to spend the whole day with him before he left. Like, we got that time with him. That's a God moment, okay? Something I didn't see that I can see now that was God definitely moving through us is also the fact that this happened so fast overnight. Because me telling you, like, how my son was with, like, his mood, and he was pulling away, and he was kind of not nice, okay? He was kind of just, it was almost hurtful, to be honest, to me sometimes. And I gave him the space. I understood, right? I'm not emotionally immature. I didn't take it personal. I'm like, he's protecting himself. But I think if we would have had to wait until September and we're like, okay, 4 weeks left, 3 weeks left, 2 weeks left, 1 week left, I think we would have killed each other. I don't know that we would have survived that. So that's another God moment. And also the fact that this did get orchestrated for this to be the one chance to get in on his dream. I feel like not only was my son handpicked on this mission, but God has very specific plans for the boys he's going to be with. That was another God moment. I knew that when he got that phone call and this happened so fast, I'm like, all right, God, I trust you. I trust that you have a plan for him. And these are the guys you want him with, because he's going to be safe and he's going to be protected. And I get that this is your thing. So not only does God give me the gift of, like, we're ripping the Band-Aid off really fast, he gives me that peace of knowing, like, he handpicked this unit specifically. That stuff happens. And so then I'm still kind of feeling that distance with my son. This part might be the tough part for me to get through. We're at the recruiter's office, and the guy who's going to shuttle him actually comes to take him, and he's like, all right, well, we got to head out. So what's going to happen is he goes to a hotel room for the night, and then he goes to MEPS the next day, where I would see him one last time. I get to go watch him be sworn in the next morning. But I had to say goodbye. All of the recruits for any, whether it's Army, Navy, military, you know, Air Force, whatever you're in, you get that hotel night, and you get like 2 hours to have like a last meal with your kid. So they'll put your kid in a hotel. Once they process him, then he gets out. His curfew is like 8:30. So he had a dinner, but because he got to spend that family time with me, he used that dinner to spend time with my ex-husband. And so they do that. I don't see him that night, but in the office, they're saying, you know, this was his big goodbye to me. And it was another God moment, because I lost it, and that boy wrapped me up, and he has never held me so tight. Like, when I tell you, we stood there for like 8 to 10 minutes. I couldn't breathe. Like, he's squeezing me, and he's obviously taller than me. Okay, I'm short, he's tall. So I'm just planted in his chest. I know his shirt is soaked, I can feel it. And I felt him holding back tears, obviously, because he's got two sergeants standing there and a new graduate. That's another God moment. I should say that before I said goodbye to my son. When we're filling out the paperwork, another God moment, an actual recent graduate. He just graduated like a couple days ago. He shows up in the office and gave us a ton of great advice. And it just made me feel good because he was like, you've got this. You could do this. You know, basically, like it's all survivable. Just go from chow to chow. That's the mindset. Chow to chow every single day. And it just goes by. And he said, by week three or four, you're so busy, you don't even have time to miss your family. So, you know, that was a God moment. It gave me just more of that extra confirmation. It's like God knew everything I would need to pack this up and be able to not lose my shit. And I got it. Everywhere I look, God just moved through this. So my son's hugging me super tight. I feel him. I feel the emotion. And I just want to say, and I can't wait to tell him this. This was the greatest I love you I've ever received from him. That hug was so confirming and it affirmed everything, and it just was so much reassurance of like that kid loves the shit out of me. Like he loves me so much, and I knew no matter how he was acting in those days, he was trying to protect himself. I also got that confirmation too in a conversation we had yesterday while he was traveling, just how he had to handle the emotions. You know, to not be emotional. And so I know he's been trying to protect himself, to be strong, to he said he didn't want to cry, like his words, I don't want to cry like a little bitch, right? That's what he said. But I got the greatest goodbye hug ever, ever, ever on Monday. Again, another it was just that peace, and just I felt it, and I'm like, I'm gonna be okay, he's gonna be okay, this is all okay. So I just told him I'm so proud of him. I know he can do this. You know, we're gonna be fine. It's gonna be incredible. I'm excited to see, to meet the man he's gonna be on the other side. And then I come home and I don't even really know what I did. I don't know what I did Monday. I think we went to the beach, but I was not mentally or emotionally present. Unfortunately, I still don't have an appetite today. I've done a protein shake every day since like Sunday. I know I'm gonna hit a wall for that. Like I woke up with a big headache, probably like super low blood sugar, all the things. I could feel that. But it's just a weird, it's such a weird feeling. Like it's in one sense, like the whole world stops. In another sense, like the world doesn't give a shit and the world is continuing to move on and you just have to figure it out. Yesterday, he gets sworn in and it was really cool. This is another God moment for me. The recruiter told us to be there at 9 a.m. I was like, heck yeah. So I show up at this office. It's 9 a.m. I'm the second one at the door. And I just stand there and you know, I'm talking to the guy across from me. He's got a son going into the Marines. He was a Marine. You know, it was pretty exciting. So I got to, you know, just talk about that for a minute. And then this was my whole goal of yesterday. I'm like, I've got to find the other Marine moms. And our recruiter was like, there's at least one more Marine from here that I know that's going. So I'm like, I'm going to find her and I'm going to just become her best friend because who else could ever understand what I'm going through? And so usually when I'm in a social setting that isn't for networking intentionally, you know, like network marketing or whatever events I go to where it is just about socializing and meeting people. I'm a very closed off, kind of cold person. I'm introverted. I don't like small talk. I don't like talking to people unless I am intentionally planning and emotionally prepared for that. I went there knowing I was going to talk to as many people as I could. And so it was so great because the next lady to walk up, and I'm actually going to share the link of the show so she can hear this because this is another God moment. The next lady to walk up, you know, I kind of tell her the rules. I'm like, they told me that we can't come inside until 9:45, can't bring anything with us. And I just kind of trauma dumped the emotions about how hard this is. And, you know, I got to hear from her, like, you know, she felt that and she didn't have words for it. So we got to kind of just lean on each other the whole day. I'd say the most unfortunate part of this is that our sons are in different branches. So there is a little difference. Like, I'm going to be super jealous. Her baby's going to be home a lot sooner than mine. But like, it's still that same emotion. Like, we're saying goodbye. We're watching our kid get signed in. Like, we're going through it. And I adore her. Like, there was just so many God moments of like being able to talk to her. I made a lifelong friend. I can guarantee you guys that. She has a 5-year-old named Alex. I have a 7-year-old named Alex. There was just like little, and her Alex was so like he reminded me of my son. And so I'm standing there just like, and the kid is drawn to me. I feel that. Like he's talking, he's like, look at me, watch what I could do. And I was just like in love. I'm like, I cannot believe this is happening because those are the things I was thinking about saying goodbye to my son. That's what I was saying goodbye to. That's what I've been mourning. It's like a little funeral of like, he's not a baby anymore. He's not dependent on me. He literally woke up one day and said, I'm going to choose the hardest thing I could choose to do in this life. What's that going to be? Oh, join the Marines. I'm going to choose the hardest thing I could do. What's the hardest, most demanding job in the Marines? A machine gunner. Ooh, I'm going to join the Marines and be a machine gunner. Like he's going for all these hard things. And it is that transition. And I think it's new. It's different for boys. Like I've got two older girls, right? They've moved out. I told you they're living their lives. They're in the transition. But with sons, it's very different because they have that biologically ingrained masculine side of like they are the protectors, they are the leaders, they are the guides. So shifting that relationship of like I'm the mom, I'm the boss, I'm the protector, I'm all these things, suddenly now like I step back and know he's stepping into his own power and it's far beyond anything I can understand. And that's a weird experience as a mom too, of like he is becoming a man. And my friend, my new friend Deanne, she's like, I asked the questions of like, did I do enough as a mom? Did I love him enough? And I think really great moms ask those questions. Did I do enough? We start thinking of every mistake we've ever made. We think of all of our shortcomings. We think of what we could have done better. I could have held him longer. I could have, spent more time on the floor playing army guys with him. Like we think about these things when we're going through this journey, but the truth is, our boys chose to do something really hard, and that says a lot for our parenting. It says a lot for who we raised and how we raised them to be. He's exactly what I wanted. I want that boy to grow into a man who is going to protect and defend people. I want that to be a man who is going to take responsibility for his emotions, his actions, his health, his mental awareness, his capacity of just being a human. And this is the most incredible way to do that. To teach him to be the protector and the provider. And someday he's going to get married and I want him to be that husband that's going to take care of his wife. Like I already pray for my daughter-in-law. Who knows who she's going to be, but I love her and I want her to have the best version of my son. That's the success. I all of that. This is the greatest way for him to step into that. So managing all of those emotions, I think it all just kind of hits you at once, but then you can't really put your finger on anything because it's everything all at the same time. So it's that bittersweet moment. The bittersweet moments of just like, we're in the arena and we have to go through this process. And the thing is, like, dads are different, right? Because dads are like, we're so excited for him. He's a man, like he's doing it. And it's very different than it is for moms. In fact, I've been posting my journey on social media since it started. And so it's been all about the Marine Mom Diary. And I am getting so much hate right now. So much hate for people, and most of the people are men. I've only had one woman. She was like, you're not the first Marine mom. Clearly, I'm not, but this is my first experience. And what if my experience can help you in your experience? What if me talking about this can help give another mom words to kind of process the emotion? Because that's the thing. It's not just our sons growing and leaving. We're being called to grow and shift too, to evolve into a better person. That's my realization. My son has 13 weeks here. I've got 13 weeks here too, because it's not fair that he's going to be someone different on the other side. I want him to look at me and see someone different on the other side too. I want him to know, you guys, this is the greatest realization I've had today. I've spent countless amounts of money on life coaches, on, business coaching, on everything. I have so many mentors. Nobody in my life has inspired me more than this kid has inspired me. Not at all. And it's that he chose the hardest thing he could ever choose, and I can't follow him. And of course, we've all driven past military bases. We've seen men in uniform your whole life, and like I don't think you ever really understand. And I did not understand until this started happening. And I'm watching the guys at MEPS, the Military Entry Processing Center, whatever they call it. I don't know what they call it. MEPS, that's what it's called. I don't know what it stands for. But there's guys in military uniform running the things and doing the swearing in and all of this. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking about their moms. I'm just thinking about all the moms. Like, nobody understands until they go through it. And I never really understood until this moment what it actually costs everyone, including the family at home. There is a price, and I understand it now, and I feel it so deeply. And the thing is, what's the truth here? I'm so incredibly proud. Like, my heart is swollen, it is full. I am so proud. I don't even have words for it. And I was so strong yesterday. I feel like I didn't really cry until the bus pulled up and I knew that would be the last time I had eyes on him for the journey. Okay. So I was okay. I see the bus pull up, but also I see him start to walk to the bus and I could tell his energy. He's like, I don't want emotional mom right now. He couldn't do it again. He got emotional mom. He guided her. He held me the day before, and he didn't want that version of me today. And the God moment at this experience at MEPS is that when I got in there after I spoke to, made friends with Deanne, and I got to go in with my son and spend an hour with him and all his buddies. Like, he found four other Marines that are going into infantry. So they're all going to stay together. They're going to the same, is it a platoon? They're going to the same thing. And they were having so much fun and joking, and they're just really great kids. I felt that. I prayed over every single one of those boys yesterday. I got to sit with them laughing, and I just got this really great sense of peace and comfort of, like, he's already met some brothers and this is lifelong. Like, that's it. I even took a picture because I can't wait until graduation to take a picture of them all together again in their uniforms. But another God moment. Not only did I make a military mom friend, I made friends plural. So I have been getting to talk to several Marine moms and other military moms for the past couple of days. It's helping me. Like, it's like I go through the process because I got my phone call before the three moms that I actually text. I got the phone call first. It came this morning, almost like 3 a.m. And this phone call is a script that the Marines or every service. So Marines, Navy, Air Force, Army, they all have to read it. And it's when they arrive at their little station. Okay, our sons are all in Paris Island. When they get here, they call you and they can't say anything off script and they have to yell in a military voice. And this was another God moment for me because when my son called, like, I'm telling you, he woke me. I was trying to take a little 2-hour nap. Didn't want to miss the call, so he wakes me. I was pretty much in a dead sleep, so I sit up and I answer the call and I hear it, and his voice is strong. He is confident. He did not waver. There was no fear. He didn't shake. It was like powerful. It was incredibly powerful, and it took my breath away. Like, literally, you could hear myself because I recorded video so the family could hear it. You could hear me, like, lose my breath. I was like like, it took my breath away. So it was that proud moment of, like, he's been waiting his whole life for this. He's been practicing for this, and here it is. I can hear his voice, and he's just strong. And I felt his strength. I think, obviously, yes, you guys, of course, I'm gonna cry after I hear it because he just hangs up. And I got to whisper, like, I love you. I'm so proud of you. Like, go crush this shit. Okay, go crush it. I got to say those things while he was yelling. If he heard them, I have no idea because I think all the kids are yelling at once. I don't know. But it was bittersweet. Another God moment. I just got this beautiful feeling of this is who he is. It's who he was raised to be. It's who God called him to be. And it's just he was handpicked here. And so I felt that feeling of, like, sadness and pride all at the same time. Like, this baby, this boy who grew up in my house, chose the Marines. Not the Air Force, not the Navy, the Marines, the one branch where they literally look you in the face and say, this is the hardest thing you will ever do. And they actually mean it. They mean it. So yeah, I've been up for days. I've cried a ton, but I've also been sitting in something that I can only describe as holy. And it is this quiet knowledge that he is exactly where he's supposed to be, doing exactly what God built him for. His whole life, you guys, his whole life, he's been military leader. I remember, Discord first comes out and he joined this thing where it was like military ranking when he was just little, and it was so important to him. He would read documents and study so he knew exactly like how the process went. Like I just can't even. If you would have met my son the past couple of months, you would be like, oh my gosh, is he in the military? The way he walks, the way he carries himself, the way he talks, like all of these things, it's incredible. So yeah, I'm sitting in this space of like my son is making his dreams come true and he's doing some really hard stuff, and then also mourning the fact that I'm not the same mom to him. I'll never be the same mom to him. Our roles have completely shifted. That boy doesn't need me on that level anymore. I don't have to hold him when there's a scary storm. I don't reassure him. He'll be the one trying to reassure me, right? Like he's fine. He's gonna be a whole ass man and a leader. So I know with all these moments, it is just an incredible God moment. And the next few weeks are going to be a little wild. I do have an incredible calendar. So this is what our Marines are doing this week. And if you are, I guess I'm really speaking to the Faith and Fire audience more than my listen bitch, but I mean truly, if you are a patriot, like just understanding what these guys go through, I think gives you a whole different level of respect for what they're doing and what really matters in this country and the history. The history of this, like it just brings so much pride of like the sacrifice they make. So what they're doing this week, it's receiving. And so this is what I'm saying. I'm calling myself out on the 13 weeks. Today was kind of it was a weird day for me, I'm not gonna lie. I got that phone call. I cried for a while. I woke up this morning and I can't even explain to you how much my body carried stuff and all of this. I felt like I've been hit by a truck or like I'd been on this crazy drinking binge. I had a massive headache. My brain was foggy. Like I'm walking through the kitchen. This is usually my husband in the mornings, and I'm like, I don't even know why I'm standing in here. It's been a really weird off day. And part of what I was processing is like on the understanding of what he's going through for the next 13 weeks, he doesn't need to be the only one that changes. How can I lock in? How can I lock in? So I spent some time in my office creating a new calendar, and tomorrow is the day that we start. It's the day that I really level up to my potential and stop just tiptoeing around everything I'm doing. It's like I'm really decent at a lot of things. I'm a decent podcaster. I'm a decent podcast coach. I'm a decent author. I'm a decent, all these things, decent homeschool mom. But like, how can I be great? How can I be an incredible homeschool mom? How can I be an incredible influence for my kids? I'm thinking about little things like I do my workouts in the mornings, like nobody's awake. So my kids don't see that influence of like working out, right? Like they don't see that stuff. How can I level up there? It's time I bring them into the workouts, right? Like there's just so many things in my life that were very clear that need to change. And so I gave myself today, I'm like, just take the day, do whatever you have to do to kind of come back to yourself. Again, like I said, I haven't worked out. My food intake sucks, which is not good because I'm on a health journey, and when I don't eat, my body freezes. Everything stalls. I'm doing the 10 pounds in 10 weeks challenge where this is like week three, and I just stalled out for a whole week. So I could become a victim of that. I could feel sorry for myself. Everybody's going to understand, right? All I have to say is, oh my gosh, my son left for the Marines and I just lost the workout. I started eating junk food. I ordered pizza. I gave up. That'd be a great excuse. And I'm sure a lot of moms probably use that because you can. Everybody would understand, like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Your baby just signed up to do this. Yeah, no, nobody's gonna judge you if you lay around watching, Christmas in July on the Hallmark Channel. No one's gonna judge me for that. But I would judge myself and I would feel like shit and I wouldn't be able to hold my head up when I see my son at the end of this. So I locked in. Like today was great, but tomorrow starts a whole new version of me. And I think if my son, this is where the motivation, the inspiration comes from. If he could do this hard thing, like he gets to sleep 4 hours a night. He could do this hard thing. And this is what happens. Like a recruit was going to arrive at MCRD. That's what it's called. It's the Marine Corps Recruit Depot. Whether he's in Paris Island in South Carolina or even San Diego in California, that's the first thing that happens. It's chaos. It is like designed chaos. Right now, he is in calculated chaos. The past since last night when he arrived, all day has been chaos. They drop them off in buses like at night. And there's yellow footprints painted on the ground outside of the receiving building. So they step off the bus and they're told exactly where to stand already, just on the footprints. And the screaming, like that starts immediately. So that's what happened last night when he arrived after he got off the plane. He's going through those initial medical screenings, administrative processing. They take their clothes. So these boys literally, like, you show up in what you're wearing, and that's what you're in for like 36 hours. And then they take everything from you. So they take his clothes, they issue him everything he's going to wear for the next 13 weeks, and then they all get their head shaved right away. Then he got to call me last night. That's the 3 a.m. call. And this is a call a lot of families call the shortest and most confusing call they've ever received because it is just that scripted message delivered by a recruit who sounds like a different person already. And that's what another mom said. Her son just gave her the call a couple hours ago. She was like, he just sounded like a different person. It could have been a random drill instructor for all I know. So yeah, if you got that call this week, that's completely normal. And that was him telling you that he arrived safe. That's their thing. And during receiving, recruits can't call themselves by name. They cannot say I. They say this recruit. And you guys, that's not a small thing. That's the beginning of the dismantling of their civilian selves. And then it's the building of something else, something harder, something that will carry a rifle and a country. Then they start learning the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Three articles by heart they have to memorize. Article 86 is no unauthorized absence. Article 91, obey lawful orders. Article 93, respect commanding officers. So from the moment they step on those footprints, they are now under military law. Those are not our babies anymore. They belong to the United States Marine Corps. They're not our babies. These boys have not slept, barely. They have been disoriented and overwhelmed, and there has been no downtime. There has been no quiet, like no moment of peace for them. It is pure chaos. There has been no civilian comfort of any kind for them. And that's just been today and to yesterday. What tomorrow is, tomorrow, Thursday, what tomorrow's going to be is pickup day. So if you're a Marine parent, you guys can go to marineparents.com and you can see the calendar. You'll see it's all printed out there. Okay. This is what happens. So tomorrow morning, the drill instructors come to the recruits. The senior drill instructor, the hat is that he walks in. And for a lot of recruits, they say that is the most terrifying moment of their life to that point because receiving was uncomfortable, but the DIs make receiving look like a welcome party. The platoon is formed. Your son is now part of a specific platoon. And it is, I do believe it is called a platoon, you guys. Typically 40 to 80 recruits in it. So he, your boys, our boys, they're going to live, train, eat, sleep, and breathe with these guys for the next 12 weeks. You learn their names, carry their weight. Push them when they want to be quiet, and hopefully they do the same for him. So it's just the brotherhood, right? I joked yesterday, like you boys are all going to be trauma bonded, literally. But the DIs immediately establish exactly who's in charge, and it's not my son. It's not anyone he knows. It's three or four drill instructors who have been trained to break everything civilian about a young man and replace it with something that can function under pressure, under fire, under conditions that most adults would fold under. After pickup, contact with home transitions to letters. And what I learned or what I've heard, what I read today, because I did, of course, join every group possible. Letters take about a week each way. So that's the world that we're both in now. And this, I think about this, like the letters and stuff, and I don't think it's a punishment. I think the communication restriction is beautiful. I think it's part of the process because those boys need to be fully inside that environment. You can't be halfway in and halfway calling home. You can't do that. And like, obviously, if these guys are going to go to have the possibility of going to war together, we want the full version of themselves in the discomfort, going through the hardest stuff so they can protect each other. I want my son to be someone who could protect your son. I want your son to be able to have my son's back. So I get this transformation, going through this process, total immersion. So I think, part of what's asked of all of us is to just trust the process, even when it's hard to be on the outside of it. And that's what it feels like for a mom when your whole everything, like we are solely linked. We are. A mother-son bond is like nothing else. There is nothing like it. It's not something I think I could even really find the words for. And that's being just what feels like clipped, ripped, cut out of you. And now, he's going to go through a few phases and faith and fire. I'll probably do some updates with you guys because this is my journey to healing in the process. Listen, bitch, I'll probably, it's not really the conversation for that show. But through all the phases, like phase one's the longest, and it's the one that will kind of establish everything for them. So this is where these boys are going to be running on 4 hours of sleep or less. They're going to wake up at 0400. Is that how you say it? And they're in motion until 2100, no exceptions. And I'm definitely going to have to start learning military time now because I'm sure that's how it'll function forever. If you look at that military.com calendar, the numbers that you're going to see, like F1, F2, F3, those are the training days in first phase, and that's how they count them. Every day has a specific event. The first thing that happens in week one is the initial strength test. So they're going to do their pull-ups, their crunches, and a timed run. If a recruit doesn't pass, they can be held back to the physical conditioning platoon until they can. And the thing I know, my son has already tested on all of this. He's surpassed it. He's prepared, but I know that it would probably hurt him if some of the other guys weren't. And I mean, they've already gone through a little mission. You guys, it was terrible at the airport. And I'm glad I had different phone numbers because my son is like, we already lost one of the guys. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, who didn't show up? Because I talked to these boys and they're excited. They're prepared. Every single one of them. I'm like, then not one of them is going to go AWOL because they're scared. I saw them. I saw their little souls. He told me who it was, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have his mom's number. I'm texting her right now. And sure enough, this kiddo, they told him he had time to go to the bathroom and to come back, and he missed his flight. So I've been blessed to get a chat with her a little bit. I told her the boys are crushed. They already feel like they lost people, and they thought they lost another one who was waiting at the gate for this other kid. And so I'm texting him and I'm like, I just want to make sure you made it on the plane because nobody can see you and they think that you're lost too. And so I, it all worked out, but it already, especially for this little guy, getting there a little late, getting separated, they're already just kind of experiencing all of those moments. So I know my son would be crushed if any of his main guys didn't pass the conditioning, but they all looked great to me. I think they're all very prepared. Week one through week three is really just establishing a baseline. So they do physical training every morning, Monday through Saturday. It's called close order drill, which is it's marching in formation. That begins immediately, and that's not just a ceremony. Drill, I guess, teaches recruits to function as a unit and to move on command without that hesitation. Just to kind of squash their individual impulse to the collective movement. It's the physical embodiment of military discipline, and that starts from day one. They get to learn Marine Corps history. the names of all the commandants, the significance of the eagle, the globe, the anchor, the battles that really made the Corps. They'll be taking classes on first aid, rank structure, core values, honor, courage, commitment. He is beginning the Marine Corps martial arts program. So they all work on towards their gray belts. That's the first level of MCMAP. He still, like, just he can't call himself by name. When addressing his drill instructor, he says, "Sir, this recruit requests permission to speak to drill instructor Sergeant, sir." Like, every time they can't get past that, you know. His windows are called portholes. His bed is a rack. The bathroom is the head. The floor is the deck. Civilians don't just take his haircut. Like, they take their vocabulary. They won't even speak the same here. And somewhere in phase one, I think it's probably week three, they go through the gas chamber. They put on gas masks, go in a room filled with the CS gas, and then they're told to break the seal. They have to take the mask off while the gas is active. What I read. Why do I research stuff and make this worse for myself? Most recruits describe this as one of the most intense moments of boot camp before the crucible itself. I mean, every instinct is going to say no, and the gas burns the eyes and the skin and the throat, but they do it anyway because a Marine learns that their body will tell them things that are not true in moments of extreme stress, and they learn to override that. And that's the truth. Like, these boys are going to override that. They're going to know something after that they didn't know before, that they can do things that feel impossible. These are the lessons I want to learn alongside of him. I don't need to go in a gas chamber to learn this lesson. I can figure this out in different ways, but like, if our boys can go through a damn gas chamber to prove to themselves that their body can override this, like, we can do that hard thing. You can start the podcast, you can write the book, you can use your voice, you can speak up, you can become an advocate, whatever it is that your calling is. Like, this is a great time to level up. So these are the times where I get to think, like, what is the thing that I think is impossible that I can override my body? How can I do that? Then they have like swim week. Week four is like swim week. That's the one people who can't swim really dread that the most. I'm happy my son can do that. But the guy who graduated, that we got to see that God moment, the guy who graduated there, he's like, if he can doggy paddle, you can pass. So it's just, if you could tread water, you have to swim 50 yards in full utilities. So that's the camouflage uniform. They don't get to wear a swimming suit. If you could tread water for 15 minutes in your camis, you're there. You have to complete water survival events in full combat load. If a recruit struggles, they get additional instruction. They call them Iron Ducks, affectionately. And most of them make it through. The point isn't to produce Olympic swimmers. It's Marines who will not panic in water, because a lot of times they could be dropped off on a ship and have to swim to shore, whatever that looks like. But they have to be able to function under physical stress in an environment that they wouldn't necessarily choose. Phase two, I read, it kind of continues with team week, where the recruits support the various base functions. Like, they're still training, still drilling, still running. But team week is also about something subtler, like working alongside people who are different from you. This is where you start to trust your team and you learn that the person next to you is the mission. My son's going to infantry, and infantry, above all other MOSs, is a team sport. What's being built in team week is the foundation for what he needs when the stakes are real. Week seven, that's phase three, we have grass week, and that's going to be the marksmanship. The Marine Corps and the rifle. Okay. Every Marine, regardless of their MOS, regardless of whether they work in finance or communications, I don't know what jobs they have in the military. Okay. Or is it logistics or infantry, like our boys? It's first a rifleman. They have a motto. It's not a slogan. Every Marine, a rifleman is doctrine. Grass week is where it starts. They're not shooting yet, they're snapping in. That means they're spending an entire week in shooting positions, learning position, sight alignment, sight picture, trigger control, and they even have to learn breath over and over. They dry fire hours of it in the grass. That's why they call it that. It's not glamorous, not sexy, but the Marines who struggle in firing week are almost always the ones who don't take grass week seriously, because fundamentals matter. And one of the most important weeks in boot camp is a live fire, the rifle range. This is where, you know, my son will get to qualify on his service rifle and earn his rifle badge. And there are three qualifications: marksman, sharpshooter, and expert. Every recruit wants expert. And the drill instructors want it for them too, because a qualified rifle range is a point of pride for a platoon. It's bragging rights. At the end of firing week, you get a qualification badge attached to his uniform. He gets to wear that for the rest of his service, and I have no doubt he's going to get the top. Every Marine has one. It goes on the chest, and it means something that no other branch puts the emphasis on, and that this person has been tested with a rifle in their hands and certified competent with it. Then we have the final week before the Crucible, and that's field training. So they do land navigation, tactical patrols, simulated combat scenarios, carrying casualty dummies, buddy rushes, night operations. My son loves this. Like, he liked the buddy operations. They did a lot of that before he left. But this is where these boys learn to function in the field as a fighting unit. It's where the classroom knowledge and the physical conditioning really start merging into something that builds our kid into a warrior. Then we have the Crucible, and I feel like this is like every parent's like heartstring. This every kid in here is probably carrying the weight of what's coming when it comes to the Crucible. This is a 54-hour field event that is the defining moment of Marine Corps recruit training. It's not the toughest run, not the hardest obstacle course. The Crucible is the culmination of everything, all of that. And it's designed to test whether a recruit has what it takes to earn the title of Marine. Those 54 hours, Monday night, the week of the Crucible, begins with a night hike. That's 5 kilometers in the dark with full gear. They arrive at the field campsite exhausted, and then the clock starts. For the next 54 hours, they sleep approximately 4 total hours, not 4 hours a night. Of the 54 hours, they get 4 hours of sleep, okay? 4 hours over 2.5 days. They ate 2.5 MREs for the entire event on a day when a grown man doing nothing. You guys, these babies burn 2,000 calories. These recruits are burning 4,000 to 5,000 on only 1,000 calories of food. They hike approximately 45 miles over the course of the 54 hours. They complete 29 warrior stations, and these are team events named after Marines who receive the Medal of Honor. Each one is a problem solving, or it's a physical challenge that can't be completed by one person. It requires the team. They require the person who wants to quit to keep going, not for himself, but for the person next to him. Then they face night infiltration, obstacle courses with full gear, casualty evacuation drills, simulated combat scenarios. These are physical challenges that would flatten most professional athletes who hadn't been training for 10 weeks first. Absolutely crush them. And then early in the morning on the third day, that's the Warriors March. They do 9 miles. They're running on 4 hours of sleep. They're running on a net calorie deficit of thousands of calories. Their feet have been in boots for 3 days. Some of them are holding each other up. Some of them are pulling each other forward by sheer will. And at dawn, at the end of the Warriors March, there's a ceremony. And this is where drill instructors who have screamed at these babies for 10 weeks, I say babies, they're recruits, I'm sorry. These guys who have pushed them past everything they thought they had, who have been the authority and the pressure and the standard for every waking moment of the last 2.5 months. Those drill instructors, I'm so excited. I'm so excited, but it is emotional, and it just makes me feel just so much pride and respect and gratitude for what these guys do. Every Marine, if you haven't, just seriously, thank a Marine. I don't know. Those drill instructors stand in formation, and they present each recruit with the eagle, the globe, and the anchor. And if you guys don't know the Marines, the eagle represents the nation. The globe represents the worldwide service and responsibility, and the anchor represents the naval traditions of the Corps. And the fouled anchor, the chain that's wrapped around it, represents the ability to overcome any obstacle. So for the first time since these boys stepped on those yellow footprints, after tomorrow, their first little step on those yellow footprints, after this crucible, at the end of it, someone calls them a Marine. And I, from the conversations I've had, most of those young men who have not cried once in 10 weeks, who probably, much like my son, have trained themselves already to suppress and push through and keep moving, This is the moment where a lot of these young men cry because they earned it. Not because someone just gave it to them, but because they went to the end of themselves and found out there was something on the other side of that edge. My son, I see him standing there at dawn after the 54 hours of that crucible, and he's going to have that emblem pressed into his hand, and someone's going to call him a Marine. I cannot wait for him to have that experience and for me to get to see that in his face when I see him again. And after the crucible, I mean, everything kind of shifts. That's when everyone can breathe. That's when parents can sleep for the first time, really at full, complete peace. The relationship with the drill instructors also change. They're still the authority, but now they step into mentorship. So the recruits can speak to each other more freely. Freedoms that were stripped on day one begin to return. They also, week 11, they get their dress blues fitting, financial responsibility classes, the things they need to know to function as adults in the world they're about to re-enter. Week 12, that's the battalion commander's inspection. So the final physical fitness test, final written exam, final drill completion, where the platoons face off and the one who is trained the best shows it off in front of a little audience. Then there's family day and then graduation. So I'm very excited because I know on that day, my Marine mamas, our sons are going to be standing in formation in their uniforms and they will be called Marines by the commandment of Marine Corps or the commanding general. And we get to watch something we will never forget for the rest of our lives. For the rest of our lives. And because my son is in infantry, boot camp graduation is not the end of the training. Like, that's barely his beginning. So after he graduates, he gets to come home for 5 days. And then he has infantry bound Marine report. He has to go to the School of Infantry. He goes to North Carolina is where he's going. That's another 60 days of training that takes what boot camp actually built and then applies it to the craft of being an infantry Marine. So he learns infantry tactics at a level boot camp only introduces, so he'll learn the patrolling, warfare, weapon systems beyond the rifle, mortars, machine guns. That's his dream. Like, he wants to be the machine gunner, fire team and squad tactics, all of these things. How to take over a building, how to move through terrain, how to be the thing that goes first when no one else can. So he goes to school there. This is going to be a long, it is going to be a long process. The infantry life is not for everyone. It's loud and hard and repetitive and utterly terrifying, I think. And it produces people of a particular quality that I don't think we could ever encounter anyone else. There is something in the eyes of Marine infantryman that you don't see anywhere else. There is a settling, there is a clarity, like, they know exactly what they can do and exactly who they are, and they have nothing to prove to anyone anymore. And that's who my son is going to be on the other side of this. It is so bittersweet, you guys. I'm so incredibly proud that he chose Marines. It was literally a matter of how can I choose the hardest thing in life and do that? And not just that, but like, what's the hardest job? What's the hardest job I could choose? And Marines is a little different. Boot camp for them is 13 weeks. Army is 10. Air Force is 8.5, and the Navy is 8. They have no weekends off, no breaks from the total environment. Marines is the hardest because of the crucible. Nothing like that exists anywhere. The pass rate is 80%, and that means one in five people who try to become a Marine don't make it. This title is earned, it is not given, and they will never call you a Marine until you have done the thing, and that thing is real. And my Malachi David, I'm so incredibly proud. Obviously, biblical Malachi is from the Hebrew. It means my messenger, a messenger of God. And he's talked about this since He was double digits. Malachi was the last prophet of the Old Testament. The last book of the Old Testament bears his name. He was a man God called to speak truth to a people who had grown comfortable and complacent in their faith, who were going through the motions, who had stopped believing their own belief. Malachi's last prophecy, the last words of the Old Testament before 400 years of silence before the birth of Christ in chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of their children to their parents. And I think about that verse. I've thought about it 1,000 times since this week started. My heart has never been more turned toward my child than it is right now. And I believe his heart is turned toward something too, something that has my name in it somewhere, even when he can't write home yet. And David, I mean, obviously, his middle name comes from the greatest warrior poet in the history of scripture. David, the king of Israel, a man after God's own heart. He started as a shepherd boy, the youngest son, the one nobody thought of first, killing a giant as a teenager with a sling and a stone and a question, is there not a cause? He became the greatest king Israel ever had. He also failed spectacularly, sinned deeply, and was broken by his own choices. And God never stopped calling him a man after his own heart because David's heart kept returning. He wrote Psalm 22 in his deepest suffering. He wrote Psalm 23 in his quiet trust. He wrote Psalm 51 in his deepest shame. He wrote Psalm 139 in his wonder. Psalm 139, verse 13, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And I think about that. I think about that. That's a verse that stood out when I was pregnant with him. When I'm thinking about this, is that God knit him together. His lungs, his hands, his compassion, his lovingness, his stubbornness, his fire, his laugh, his ability to run until other people quit, knit together on purpose. None of this is an accident, and I don't believe for one second that the kid I raised in this faith who chose the hardest thing America asks of anyone, he didn't do this by accident. God tells the prophet Samuel to go to the house of a man named Jesse in Bethlehem. One of his sons will be the next king of Israel. Samuel arrives. Jesse brings out his son. The first one walks in. Samuel looks at him and thinks, this is the one. This is a guy. He's tall. He's impressive. He looks like a king. And God said, do not look at his appearance or height. I do not see what man sees. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Jesse brings son after son. Seven sons stand before Samuel, and God says no to every single one. Samuel asks Jesse, are all these your sons? And Jesse says, there's one more. He's the youngest. He's keeping the sheep. They didn't even bring him in. He wasn't on the list. He was the kid nobody thought of first. He's the one doing the unglamorous work in the field while his brother stood before the prophet. And Samuel says, send down for him. We won't sit down till he arrives. David comes in, and the moment he walks through the door, God says to Samuel, rise and anoint him. This is the one. And Samuel anointed him right there in front of his brothers in his father's house, covered in the smell of whatever the sheep had been doing that morning. And from that day, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. I don't know what God is doing in my son. I don't know what battles he's going to fight. I don't know what ground he'll take or what brothers he'll carry through the dark. I don't know where in the world his boots will stand or what he will be asked to do. But I know that the God who found David in a field and said, this is the one, he does not stop doing that. He's still finding people who weren't on anyone's list and calling them into something bigger than anything their family thought to prepare them for. And I believe with everything that I am that my son, Malachi David, is one of those chosen people. I want to speak one thing just over my son, and I want to speak it over your soldier, your Marine, your service member, your deployed child, your kid who is far from home in something hard. Psalm 91. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. If you say, the Lord is my refuge, and you make your Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you, no disaster will come near your tent, for He will command His angels concerning you to guard you in all of your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. That is the promise over my son tonight. That is the promise I am standing on for the next 13 weeks and beyond. His training is physical and mental and brutal, and I would not trade it for anything because it is building what God put in him into something with an edge. But no drill instructor and no crucible and no distance puts him outside the shadow of the Almighty. He is covered. If you don't know the God who covers warriors, who found a shepherd boy in a field and made him a king, who commands angels to guard the ones who dwell in him, today is a good day to meet him. Not when things are easy, but right now, as you are. He is the same God who was with David in the field, who will be with Malachi in whatever field comes next, and he's with you too. Semper Fidelis, always faithful. That's the Marine motto, and it's also word for word the nature of the God who called my son. I love you guys. 13 weeks. Clock starts tomorrow, boots on the ground. I don't know what tomorrow looks like, but I know I will give it my all because I'm completely, incredibly inspired and moved by the strength of my son. We will not be the same people when we meet again. And that is my promise to him and the promise to myself and the promise to my family. I love you guys. Malachi David, I love you. So incredibly proud. And I will see you on the other side of the crucible.